The Warriors sneak out another win, but Steph doesn't get the record. The Suns have a disappointing night in LA, and a bunch of teams either collapsed or almost had a collapse. This is Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Locked On NBA. My name is Matt Moore. I'm the senior NBA writer for the Action Network and the host of Locked On Nuggets. David, say hi.
Hello. How are you?
I'm David.
This is David.
I'm David Ramil.
I am. David Ramil, host of Locked On Heat. You can follow me at DRamil13 on Twitter.
We have a brand new show for you. We're doing this for the first time. This is like a pick and roll combination, and we're not going to be able to understand where the other one's supposed to be at all, but we're going to figure it out as we go with the new Locked On NBA Tuesdays, breaking down the games for you, giving the insights, all sorts of stuff. Known David forever. It's going to be a lot of fun. Glad that you're along with us. Want to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by Truebill. Truebill is a new app that saves you money by helping you identify and stop paying for subscriptions you don't want or need, and can even negotiate better deals on those you want to keep. Check it out at Truebill.com. On today's show, we'll break down the 9 games in the association, giving you our takes, the meanings and the performances and all of the good stuff. David, where should we start on this fine Tuesday?
Well, I think there's a big game going on, or a storyline that a lot of people are following regarding the Golden State Warriors. Something about pursuit of a historical landmark. I'm not exactly sure what it might be.
So, out in Indiana, as Steph Curry desperately tries to get the record so he can get this just really annoying thing off of his back at this point, because you can tell that they're pretty – the Warriors are annoyed with it. Steph Curry's annoyed with it. Steph was forcing it early to try and get the record. The Warriors trailed the Indiana Pacers for most of the game in an ugly, stilted, awkward affair. I thought this was going to be a low-scoring game, and it was. At the very end, Curry hits a big three and then hits a twisting layup when they overclosed out on him to put the Warriors up 5. They wound up winning 102-100. Big performance by the Warriors defense. Honestly, I thought the Pacers played well, and then the Warriors just hung around because their defense, they hung around and get the win. They just kind of snuck this. Steph Curry goes 8 of 20 from the field, 5 of 15 from three. He took 15 three-pointers because you could, and like Kerr admitted this after the game, that he is trying desperately to, like, he wants to get this done and he feels pressure. Andre Iguodala had comments about it, about how like everyone wants to make it about them and they need to let him enjoy it. And kind of like, you get paid for this. There's a whole thing here. I guess my question is after the game, right? So the Warriors get this win, they steal it from the Pacers. After this, they get stranded on the tarmac because the plane had malfunctioned. They're not flying out to New York until tomorrow, today when you're listening to this. They're going to get into New York on Tuesday morning and play the Knicks on Tuesday night. You know the Warriors quite well. Like, what are your thoughts on, like, how this whole thing, like, has proceeded? Like, we all know the Warriors. So, like, do you think this has, like, had a big impact on the Warriors' performance in terms of they've shot really poorly the last couple of weeks? This is another bad shooting game. Is it going to be good to get this record thing behind them?
Yeah, I can't see. I just they've kind of done this historically, right, over the last few years. They set up these kind of historical benchmarks that they're trying to achieve, and then they get past them, and then they can just actually concentrate on playing good basketball. Not that they haven't been playing good basketball, but to me, it's a storyline that a lot of people are rallying behind, are interested in, but I think they're tired of answering questions about it. They're tired of it being a focus. They just want to get back to playing winning basketball. And you know what? After tomorrow's game against or today's game against the Knicks, they should be able to wrap this up and put it behind them.
Also in the association, the Bucks and the Celtics played, and the Celtics got a pretty big win, 117-103. The Bucks, I gotta tell you, David, like the Bucks looked about as unsteady as I think I've seen them in the second half. Chris Middleton suffered a hyperextended knee, so he missed about most of the second half of this game. Played 23 minutes, 48 seconds. Giannis with just 20 on 7-14, like 28-3, just 3 assists for him. The starters really got ran off the floor in the third quarter. Jaylen Brown was fantastic on defense. Jason Tatum, 42 points, 16 of 25, 5 boards, 4 assists, 3 steals, plus 21, 64% from the field, 54% from 3, 7 of 13 from 3 for Tatum in this one. I got to tell you, the Bucks looked like they just weren't connected defensively. They whatever reason, they came out at halftime and they just were not ready for the intensity level. The Celtics, to their credit, they've had a lot of like really inconsistent games and underperformed. They put it together in the second half. Like, if you ask me, was this game more the Celtics were good or the Bucks bad? I would tell you it really was about half and half. The Bucks definitely didn't shoot well, but they also didn't play with urgency in that second half. It was kind of weird in a matchup between two teams that are, you know, I mean, they've got a playoff history and the Celtics are always kind of mentioned as like one of those teams to watch in the East. It was, it's kind of interesting, but yeah, the Celtics get a big win behind Tatum's big performance.
Yeah, are you concerned at all about the Celtics? Because it looks like they're kind of turning things around. I know they've been able to kind of tread water up to this point, but right now at 14-14, about 500, but with the Eastern Conference being so muddled, they've got just as good a chance of any of pushing eventually for home court advantage, and maybe they'll turn it around. Of course, we keep hearing Dennis Schroeder and trade rumors and things of that sort. Do you think that Boston can become a team that can get into the top 4 seeds in the Eastern Conference?
I think it's going to be tough because of how good Chicago and Cleveland have looked. Chicago's probably going to continue to dip with all of their COVID problems. But yeah. I do think that the Celtics – I think the biggest issue is we haven't seen the Celtics be consistent when Tatum has been the best player on the team.
Right.
And I don't necessarily know that that's his fault. It just – they have missed having like a veteran superstar to kind of keep them – night to night. Like, that's been their issue. Is it's not that they don't look good sometimes, it's that they don't look good week to week. And so I don't feel like I have any sort of like real expectation. If you ask me, like, are they going to finish fourth, it really comes down to does that mean that the season ends when they happen to be having a push, or does the season end when they're having a slump or somewhere in the middle? I don't know what to expect from the Celtics team week to week. This was a good performance that shows you how talented they are. I thought they got really good contract. Like, Marcus Smart was 1 of 6 from the field, but his defense on Chris Middleton was great before Middleton got hurt. Getting Brown back is obviously, like, that's been a bigger deal than people, I think, have made it out to be. Grant Williams, by the way, 5 of 7 from 3 tonight. When he's hitting those threes, they are fundamentally a better and different team. That's a big difference maker for them.
Absolutely.
What'd you see in Rockets Hawks tonight?
I saw another collapse from the Atlanta Hawks. That's the big story there for me, is that they just keep finding ways to lose games in the fourth quarter. They were asked about it before the game. It's been an unsettling trend for them, and they were absolutely dominated again in the fourth quarter by a not particularly good Houston Rockets team that's in an active rebuild, of course. 32 points from buyout superstar Eric Gordon, 22 points from DJ Augustine. The Hawks were outscored 44-25 in the last quarter. I mean, that's an epic collapse. This is only the second road win of the season for the Houston Rockets. And again, the Hawks, a team that was in Eastern Conference last year, all of a sudden not looking particularly good. There are legitimate concerns there, and I'm not sure exactly what it's going to take for them to turn it around, because they keep saying, oh, we're going to figure it out. Trae Young starts off the year a little slowly. They're not getting it, and I'm not sure that they're going to be able to just – or they can't just fire Nate McMillan and get another injection of energy the way they did last year. So I don't know if there's a solution there for the Hawks this season.
16 in the first quarter for Trae. He was – I saw the highlights of that. Like, he was on fire. It's interesting. Their defense is just – their defense – this is really the problem is I feel like they just aren't paying enough attention on the defensive end. Yeah. And – I don't know. They don't have really the personnel solutions. Like, Capella's defensive numbers have kind of slid since the prime Rockets days. Yeah. I think Collins can be a good defender, but he's just not quite where he needs to be. Trey's obviously undersized. That's always going to be an issue. Like, they don't have a lot of like really good defensive wings. You want to, but that's mostly because DeAndre Hunter's out. Like, that to me is like kind of the big differential here, is like they need that kind of like leverage wing that they can assign to kind of calm things down or make plays for them defensively. And without Hunter, I feel like they're really missing that. No KPJ, no Jalen Green, and the Rockets like bare bones squad. Good for Eric Gordon and DJ Augustine making a case for, hey, somebody come get me or trade me or buy me out, please.
Yeah.
Good for those guys for making the case.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's take a break. Right. We'll come back. And when we come back, we're going to keep going through the 9-game slate, including We'll talk a little bit about a weird Nuggets Wizards game. Also, the Clippers get a big win out west. We'll do that when we come back on Locked On NBA. But first, I do want to tell you about Truebill. So, Truebill, you know why free trials renew without your consent? It's a business scam to get your money out of you. Don't let them do that to you. Don't let them take that from you. Don't let greedy corporations pocket your money. Download Truebill to take control of your subscriptions. Truebill is the new app that helps you identify and stop paying for subscriptions you don't need, want, or simply forgot about. On average, people save up to $720 a year with Truebill. Because companies make subscriptions hard to cancel, Truebill makes it incredibly simple. Just link your accounts and Truebill will cancel your unwanted subscriptions in one tap. And your Truebill concierge is there when you need them to cancel unwanted subscriptions so you don't have to. Truebill has over 2 million users and helped save them over $100 million. Don't fall for subscription scams. Start canceling today at Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. Go right now. Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. It could save you thousands a year. Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. David, you want to tell the folks about Stance?
Yeah, absolutely. Stance is a great product. Look, it's a great brand. You've probably heard about them before. They were founded in 2009. Their apparel represents a radical reinvention of socks, underwear, and active apparel with a sharp focus on comfort, quality, and creativity. Stance brings an atypical aesthetic alongside some of pop culture's hottest collaborators for the ultimate in style and self-expression, because everything you wear should be a direct extension of who you are and not just how you feel. Look, there's so many great different versions of these products that you can get. You can get a Star Wars edition, Harry Potter, Disney, Marvel, and of course, for sports lovers like us, Major League Baseball, and of course, the NBA. Stance is so great. Soft socks, comfortable underwear. You don't even know that you're wearing them. It just feels so great. And you just love wearing these products. And you know what? I think you'll appreciate them too. So go to right now, go follow Stance. Believes they believe that the perfect fit matters more than just fitting in, that those who feel good do good. So go see for yourself. Register for an account at stance.com and get 15% off your first purchase. Use the promo code LOCKEDON at checkout to apply. Enjoy the color and comfort of a life less ordinary with Stance.
I'm wearing Stance right now. I'm wearing my Alonzo Mourning Stance socks right now as we speak. And we'll be back with more after this on Locked On NBA.
Thanks for making Locked On NBA your first listen every day. Remember that every episode is always free and available wherever you get the show. I'm David Ramil. I'm here with Matt Moore, and we're taking you through a busy slate of games on Monday night. 9 games on the slate. We've covered 3 so far. Let's get into the rest of it. Matt, you were covering the Washington Wizards and Denver Nuggets matchup. That was a 113 Nuggets win, 107 over the Wizards. The Wizards kind of struggling a little bit, obviously. They've been going through some issues of late. They had most of their starting lineup back with Spencer Dinwiddie back in the starting lineup. 19 points from Bradley Beal. What was the big case there against the Wizards? What happened to them? They had somewhat of a collapse late in the fourth quarter as well?
The Nuggets did. So,
that's right, like, the Nuggets. Sorry.
Yeah, no, because like, okay. It was a very weird game, David. All right. The Nuggets were without 3 starters. No Will Barton, no Michael Porter Jr., no Jamal Murray. They're without JaMychal Green. Austin Rivers is still in protocols. Like, they're missing so many guys. They started Jeff Green and Davon Reed, who was on the last day of his 10-day contract. Like, I'm sorry, his 2-way contract. He has to go down to the G League. So... yeah. It was Monte Morris, Davon Reed, Jeff Green, Aaron Gordon, and Jokic starting. They ran a 10-man rotation with Vlatko Chanchar and Marcus Howard, and yet they were up 30 on the Wizards. Like, they absolutely housed them. Nikola Jokic had – I'll be honest with you. I see so many of these. It's hard for me to parse apart which are the best Jokic performances. This is up there this season. Saturday's game versus the Spurs is up there too. Okay, Jokic played 30 minutes and 36 seconds. We'll get to why he didn't play more in a second. 28 points, 19 boards, 9 assists, 3 steals, 1 block, and a plus 21. He shot 9 of 14 from the field and 1 of 2 from three-point range. I mean, it was incredible. He was a plus 21 in 30 minutes of this game. And then the bench was great in the first half. Facu Campazzo made a bunch of really flashy passes, as he does. And then the second half, the same stuff that always happens kind of happens. The Nuggets get it to 30. It gets down to 26 as the quarter is winding down. I say to a colleague, I was like, if the Wizards get this within range, it's going to be trouble because Jokic is going to have to come back to close it out.
Right.
The bench collapses. Jokic comes back in. Tony Brothers, who I think has ejected Jokic 3 times in his career, Jokic picks up 2 techs, in part because Jokic gets really frustrated that he builds these leads and the bench can never, not just like, it's fine if it's like, oh, when he left, you were up 15 and now you're only up 9. Okay, minus 6, no big deal. Literally in the second half, the Nuggets bench was outscored something along the lines of like by 22 points. Facu Campazzo in the second half was a minus 25, David. A minus 25 in 15 minutes and 29 seconds. And so Jokic comes back in, and the comparison I've made on Locked On Nuggets is it's like if you have kids and you clean the entire house and you go upstairs for an hour and you come back downstairs and they've wrecked the living room. And you're like, I just cleaned it. What are you doing? And so Jokic gets frustrated. He gets frustrated with what he feels is inconsistency in calls. He gets ejected. The Nuggets are up, but now they're without Jokic and they wind up just getting out. This was very much in doubt. Like the Wizards could have won this game if a few more transition threes had gone down. The Nuggets bench is a war crime. Like, it is absolutely god awful. It is so bad. But the Nuggets get the win. The Wizards, with a really disappointing performance, they just couldn't do anything with Jokic, who is dominant. Got some other good performances from Monte Morris, was just steady, 12 points in the second half alone. So like, he was steady for them. They got a really good performance from the starters. Like, Aaron Gordon continues to have he's having a really good season. The numbers aren't spectacular. He's just played really well. Jeff Green chipped in, but oof, boy, that bench is pretty rough.
He's got to be used to it by now, right? I mean, like, I understand, but there's a rational explanation too. Like, half your starting lineup is out. You have to expect that your bench isn't going to be able to hold on to these incredible leads. Like, I understand he's a perfectionist, right? And a superstar, and that kind of mentality of thinking, well, everybody should be this good, but that's not the reality. What's the source of that frustration other than, well, you know, they're kind of making things much more difficult for me than they need to.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it's just like, he played 72, like, it was heavy minutes, the hiatus, played in the bubble, played heavy minutes in the bubble, 1 month off, 72 games, playoff run, and then into this. Like, he's just been, I think he's just mentally fried. And on top of it, again, I think if the bench was like minus 6, it's fine. But when it's minus 15, when 15, there is often the case that he exits the game with the Nuggets up 10 and he comes back into a tied game. And it's just like in very short amount of time. And you could just tell there's a matter of like, I just got us a lead. So the frustration continues, but the Nuggets get a win. And as they continue to try and stay afloat until they get some guys back from injury down the line.
Well, speaking of staying afloat, the LA Clippers were in the late game on Monday night. They were taking on the Phoenix Suns team, but a Phoenix Suns team without DeAndre Ayton, without Devin Booker. Of course, the Clippers were also without Paul George, who was out of the lineup, but they came up with a pretty big win. It was a very dominant performance from the Clippers, and especially in the fourth quarter. In the third quarter, they got some nice numbers from Zubac. Ivica Zubac, who continues to play solid minutes for the Clippers. The Clippers tried to make a run late. I'm sorry, the Suns made a run late in the game, but the Clippers wind up getting some nice shooting from Reggie Jackson and from Luke Kennard, who was inserted in the starting lineup. He finished 3 of 5 from three-point range. A nice win for the Clippers. I'm not sure it really means much to the Suns. They'll have to move on quickly and put this behind them. They still hang on to the best record in the Western Conference, I believe. But at this point, the Clippers just doing what they can. No significant takeaways from this game other than they had a good win. They're 16-12 on the season. Keep finding a way to win without Paul George and kind of biding their time until Kawhi Leonard comes back, if he comes back. I don't know. What do you think, Matt? Anything from this game in particular?
I think the big thing is that with Ayton out, they weren't able to punish the switch as much as they usually can, right? So, like, that's one of the big advantages for the Suns in that matchup is Ayton's ability specifically to punish them, and JaVale is just not the JaVale's having a magnificent season. Like, yeah, he's having maybe the best season of his career. But Ayton is able to do a lot more, I think, versus those small ball lineups. Like, that to me was like a notable thing is, oh, without Ayton, they struggle. But then again, like, look, you know, Chris Paul goes 4 of 14, 0 of 2 from 3. And the Suns shoot 7 of 29 from three. You're not going to beat the Clippers shooting 7 of 29 from three. When the Clippers only shoot 21 threes, but they make more than you, you're never going to win that game.
Yeah, you know what? Let's move on, because this is a team that I think has taken a lot of people by surprise. The Memphis Grizzlies taking on the Philadelphia 76ers. No Joel Embiid in the lineup for the Sixers. No Seth Curry. Also, of course, no Ben Simmons as well. But for the Grizzlies, they continue to find a way to win. This time behind Dylan Brooks. Of course, Ja Morant out for the Memphis Grizzlies, but they got 23 points from Brooks, 9-15 from the floor, but they also got a 22-point contribution from Jaren Jackson Jr., who continues to find a way to thrive without Ja Morant on the floor. Should we be making more of the fact that Jackson's had his best stretch of the season with Morant off the floor? Or are we not talking about the Grizzlies enough? I made the same point on last week's Locked On NBA, but I feel like people are kind of just overlooking this Grizzlies team that I think is exceeding expectations. But at this point in the season, look, they're 17-11. They've got the fourth best record in the Western Conference. They're a damn good team, and somehow we're not talking nearly enough about them, despite the fact that they're continuing to roll over teams without their best player in the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think the big difference, this is a worrisome thing for me as a guy that holds Memphis close to his heart. Like, Ja Morant's on-court numbers are poor. And if you dig down, you find that a lot of the defensive metrics basically say that the defense goes to absolute garbage when Morant's on the floor. And since he's been out, Memphis has been a spectacular defensive team. Like, that combination of events is like a very weird, Like, a lot of it's small sample and it's always contextual, and like, they can just play better, and Dylan Brooks wasn't playing and all these type of things. And I'm very receptive to all of those things, but Memphis literally has in the last 2 weeks the best defensive rating in the league per clean the glass. They're averaging just 97 points per 100 possessions allowed. That's 4 points better than the second best team, which is Cleveland, who we'll talk about in the third segment. This is the real difference to me, is like, the Grizzlies are cooking offensively still without Morant, but their defense is way better. So the question is just going to be, if they get Ja back here in a couple of weeks, are they going to go back to being a poor defensive team? Because quite honestly, when I dove into the numbers, here's what was surprising. Early on, the questions were about, can Jaren Jackson and Steven Adams play together defensively? Those two numbers defensively are awesome until you add in Ja Morant. Yeah. And it's like, now a lot of that is because Morant was on the floor when they got just destroyed by the Miami Heat and other teams that just came in. Like, their losses were terrible. And so that ran it up, and the bench units with Ja were worse defensively, but that's maybe my big concern. I will just say, I think with Taylor Jenkins, like, he's been impressive the first 2 years of his career. Again, like, for them to be as shorthanded as they've been at the various points, they started off without Dylan Brooks. Now they're without Ja. They've won games without Jaren. Like, they've just won, and they get contributions from everybody. This roster is deep. I think right now, like, until either the Nuggets make a run, the Clippers kind of figure something out, or one of those other teams like the Lakers get it together, the Grizzlies are the fourth best team in the West record-wise. They're also just very clearly the fourth best team. Like, they have actually played well enough. This isn't flukish. They have genuinely have, like, their win profile is solid. The Grizzlies are a really good team this season.
Are we ready to call them a contender? Because I'm kind of there.
I can't see them winning. If it's second round versus Phoenix,
that's a
tough I don't know what that, like, I can't program you like a, okay, if X, Y, and Z happens, the Grizzlies can win. I don't know what that looks like, right? Because the Suns are so sharp and they're so physical. But I will say this, like, the Grizzlies are really well balanced and they get big contributions from anybody. They bring a lot of firepower to the table. I think it depends on, the question is just, when you saw what happened to them last year versus the Jazz getting the reverse gentleman's 1-4, what is like so much better about them this year that's going to put them at a different level versus those top three teams? And I just can't see it. A first round win that I can see. I can see them winning the 4-5 if they get into it. I do like them to win the division, though. I like them a lot more than the Mavericks, despite the Mavericks having a big night tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. Which we'll talk about in the next segment. But first, just a reminder that you listen to podcasts for the power of knowledge, but you switch to Boost Mobile for the power of saving money. Get 3 unlimited data lines for $30 a month per line and a free 5G phone when you switch, so you can get the latest episodes of Locked On NBA, Locked On Nuggets, Locked On Heat, of course, all on one of America's largest 5G networks. More power to save. That's Boost Mobile. Free phone is limited to new customers and only one per line. Additional restrictions apply. Offers and coverage not available everywhere or for all phones and networks. See BoostMobile.com for details.
Back here on Locked On NBA, thanks for making this part of your day. Thanks for making us your first listen each and every day. Now make your second listen, Locked On Bets, where Lee Sterling and your boy Q give you the absolute best picks day by day. Available wherever podcasts are, they're free and available on all platforms. That's Locked On Bets. Wrapping up with David Ramil, breaking down Monday's night in the NBA. David, you are the host of Locked On Heat.
That's right.
The Heat are, I don't know, there's like 40% of the Heat there-ish, and they ran into the buzzsaw that is the Cleveland Cavaliers tonight.
Yeah, not an ideal matchup for them. Obviously, they have some issues without Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo, and up-and-coming star Caleb Martin finding a way to contribute on a two-way contract, providing quite the value for the Miami Heat. And then Cleveland's just incredible size just created some really bad mismatches for the Heat that they couldn't find a way to exploit. But it ultimately came down to three-point shooting. Miami didn't have it. Cleveland did. And a big part of that three-point shooting was coming from 33-year-old veteran Kevin Love. All 23 points of his in the second half. Just a phenomenal performance from him. Look, the Cavs are really, really good. I think they've leapfrogged past the Heat or fourth in the Eastern Conference. So they too are making a push here. I don't know how sustainable it is at the same time. It doesn't feel quite like what we just discussed about the Grizzlies. I don't trust Cleveland's depth as much as Memphis's. I don't trust that they're going to be able to make the same kind of adjustments and things of that sort. And I don't know how this young core will find a way to sustain their level of play in the playoffs. In a 7-game series, I'd still favor a team with veterans like Miami, et cetera. But as far as the regular season is concerned, they're a damn good team. And I think a lot of people should be taking them seriously because they've, again, continued to have an identity here. They're forming some identity that they did not have over the last couple of seasons without LeBron James. And I think they're surprising a lot of people there with their young cast. I mean, Evan Mobley is fantastic. Jared Allen was spectacular tonight against an undersized Heat team that continues to get a great performance from P.J. Tucker, having what I think is his best season of his career. He's been really, really good for Miami, creating plays for others, shooting from the perimeter, etc. Tyler Hero suffered a thigh contusion early in the game, and he was not the explosive scorer that he normally is. And so it looks like Miami is going to be continuing to miss even more players over the next couple of games as they take on the Philadelphia 76ers for the next two games of their three-game road trip.
Has it been more evident that they miss Jimmy or that they miss Bam? I know that they miss both of them. And the Bam. Combination thereof. It's Bam. Yeah. That's the one that it really is. Stands out.
Yeah, it's their whole defensive identity is built on him. And I mean, you've seen Jimmy thrive being able to play alongside Bam because he does so much for this team. And you can see it early on when Bam was first lost to that thumb injury that required surgery. Like, they didn't have any kind of stability defensively. They were just letting everybody score at will. And you know, he does so much because he can switch 1-5 and He's a great rebounder as well. He gets to the line. His offense is sure, it's fantastic, but at the same time, you're also counting on his playmaking. A guy like Duncan Robinson needs to have Bam getting him going. It's just been the pairing that's always worked between those two. But yes, defensively in particular, you really miss Bam out on the floor.
I really thought that the Charlotte Hornets were going to get a win versus the Mavericks. Mavericks on a back-to-back without Luka Doncic. And instead?
Yeah, not quite.
Not quite.
The Kristaps Porzingis game. A really solid game from him. 24 points, 13 rebounds, 5 blocks. Really good showing from him. And look, the Hornets missing LaMelo Ball, of course, and getting a version of Terry Rozier back after missing some time due to health and safety protocols. Miles Bridges, struggled in 28 minutes of play, just 2 of 11 from the floor. The Hornets kind of falling apart. I mean, a lot of it due to injury, again, health and safety protocols, missing key players in their lineup. But it seemed like whatever momentum they had early in the season has significantly tapered off there. And the Mavs, conversely, look like they're getting slowly better, even without Luka Doncic in the lineup.
Yeah, they hit their threes tonight, which has been a big sore point. They've been missing a lot of open threes. They hit, they were 19 of 41 tonight, which isn't like a great percentage on a single variance, but on 41 shots, that 46% from three is going to get done. They hit 6 more than the Hornets, and that's more than enough. The Hornets' defense is really poor. And if you let they give up a lot of three pointers and they give up a lot of stuff at the rim. So this is definitely like a get right game for the Mavericks. I'm still skeptical on Dallas. I still don't think that things are right there, but this, I will admit, I was not expecting them, even with the Hornets so shorthanded, I thought that they would be able to get the win in Dallas. And instead they blow out wire to wire win for Dallas, their first of the season. So good get right game there. David, the Kings. The Kings, David, just look, I want to credit the Raptors. Okay. No, like they are still shorthanded. Like a lot of teams are, this team is not like overloaded with talent. They still don't have Anunoby. That's a big missing piece. They get a solid night from Pascal Siakam with 16 points. They get 12 from Fred VanVleet. But their bench goes absolutely bonkers. Justin Champagne is 10 points. Malachi Flynn chips in with 14 in garbage time. Like Yuta Watanabe scored. The Kings are so bad, David. Like, so after the game, Fox has this entire rant, and I want to.
Oh boy. Good.
If you got kids in the car, you're going to want to mute the pod. it's not about just, he was asked about the effort level, and it was what he said was perfect. He said, it's not about just playing hard. There's not too many people in this world who can be a lazy motherfucker and make it to the NBA. Everybody played hard to get here. Everybody plays hard when they're here. It's just about being sharp. Everything that you do, obviously with that second group that they have, Toronto, there's no one out there that's just going to go out there and get a bucket, but everything they do is quick, sharp, to the point. They know exactly what they need to do, and they're running shit to a T. There's not too many teams in this league that are running complicated stuff. It's just not a thing. Most people have a coach from a similar coaching staff, and they copy whatever coach they were under, and everybody is running the same shit. So when we're out here, it's just about being sharp. Now, if it's a loose ball, 50-50 ball, shit like that, then yeah, it's about playing hard. But when you're out there and coverages, your coverage isn't about playing hard. Your coverage is about being sharp. So when we're out there running a play, obviously you want to run the play fast and get into your shit, but it's not just about doing the play hard. It's about doing it sharp. So if the timing is off, that's not about playing hard. That's about being sharp. If we fuck up a coverage when you're not supposed to switch and you switch, or vice versa, whatever it may be, it's not about playing hard. It's about playing sharp. You're not giving up 130 because you're not playing hard. This was absolutely perfect because it just instills everything that I watched, where you're watching them and it's like the Kings are this example of a team that just doesn't execute anything well. Like nothing is where it should be. The defense is like, the opposing offense is never stymied on anything. You want to drive, you're going to get a lane. You want to kick the ball and get a rotation, you're going to get it. You want to work to find an open shot, you're going to find it. You want to get a layup, you're going to create it. Nothing. It's not just like physicality or effort and like making them, you know, running hard. It's about just like being aware and caring enough to be mentally focused on what you're supposed to be doing. There were just rotations tonight, David, where literally the Raptors were moving the ball and like a guy could contest. He genuinely didn't know whether or not he should. Like the Kings were like, should I contest this or is that his, like, looking around for one another, the Kings are not the worst team in the league in terms of talent. If you put that team on paper, the Kings are not the worst team. Right now, the way that they are playing, the Kings are the worst team in basketball. They've absolutely been horrible.
So it's not just about playing sharp, as Fox says. I mean, some of it is, like, you kind of screwed the pooch there. You're not playing sharply for three quarters, and then by the time the fourth quarter comes around, you keep seeing the same futility over and over again. You also stop playing hard at that point. You give up on plays, like the ones you just described here, where you're kind of just – you're lost, and then all of a sudden you just sort of fall apart and just kind of let it culminate. And not only on terrible nights like tonight or yesterday, but also over the course of, what, a decade? Decades plus of futility? I mean, it's been so
long. 2 decades.
Yeah, it feels like a lot longer, perhaps, especially for Kings fans. I don't know. It's just, where does the blame start? How do you just start over at this point? Do you just trade everybody in the roster? Do you, you know, overturn the complete front office? I don't know that there's any solution for it. And yet it kind of feels like every game is a new indication of how bad things could get for Kings fans.
They need the way I phrased it the other night is they need a restore to factory settings. Like, you have to start from the ground up.
Send them to Seattle.
Everything. No, no. They worked hard to keep that team there. No, the fans worked really hard to keep that team there. They can work in Sacramento, but God, they got to
read. I trust you, but I don't know how, because at this point, it seems like every year they keep putting faith that, you know, that we're going to turn it around. We have talented players. Like you said, it's not a bad roster, and yet it doesn't work.
Disastrous. They really, oh boy, is it bad. It was really bad. That's going to wrap it up for Lockdown NBA. Thanks for joining us. He's David Ramil. You can follow him on Twitter at DRamil13. You follow me on Twitter at HP Basketball. We're with you every Tuesday. Make sure to keep tuned in for the show throughout the week. Thanks for joining us. You can follow us on Twitter at LockedOnNBAPods. Make sure to check us out on YouTube. Subscribe, like, do all those things. And we'll see you guys again next week on another edition of Locked On NBA.